Okay, I think we'll kick off. I think John McDonnell's just finishing up his speech, apparently, so I think people might filter in, and hopefully our final speaker will filter in as well. It's great to see you all here. Hope you've enjoyed the chips. My name's Liv Bailey. I'm the research director at the Fabians. I hope that you'll excuse that I'm neither northern nor much of a powerhouse, but I hope that we'll have a good discussion this afternoon. Our topic is northern powerhouse spin or substance. Is it just more Tory rhetoric? Well, none of us will forget George Osborne's smirk when he made the Queen say it in the Queen's speech. Or is it something that the left should engage with and make work to sort of support our progressive values? I'm joined by a fantastic panel. On my far right, I've got John Holland Kay, who's the chief executive of Heathrow. Conor McGinn, sitting next to me here, is the newly elected MP for St Helens North and is also an opposition whip in Jeremy Corbyn's team. Tony Dravers to my left is the professor in the Department of Government at LSE and a director of the LSE, and a prolific writer on these topics. And Jessica Studdart is the newly appointed deputy director of the new local government network, and it's great to have her here. Nick Forbes is due to join us at the end. He is the leader of Newcastle Council. Okay, so we'll kick off with some short speeches from each of the panel. I'll go in the order I've just introduced people, and then we'll go to the floor for questions in rounds of three. John.
Great, well, thank you. I'm, although I sound like a southerner, I actually was born in Cumbria, so I can claim some interest in the north. And the thing I love about the Northern Powerhouse is the sense of ambition and opportunity that goes with it. It says that we don't have to accept the thing just because things have been like this for decades, that they should always be like this. We can change our future. And the model I tend to look at is Singapore. Singapore is a rock in the middle of nowhere with no natural resources other than the ingenuity of their people. And what the Singapore government has done is to put in place the raw materials, the training, the development, and they connected themselves to the world, and they have created one of the world's great economies. And why can that not happen here? Why does it have to be just a London-centric model for the UK when there is so much more opportunity, if only we can tap into the ingenuity and creativity across the UK? And that is where Heathrow comes in. We have some fantastic airports connecting the north to Europe and to some key global markets. But to really untap the potential within the north, we need to connect them to all the growth markets of the world. And that's where Heathrow complements the great work done by Manchester, by Newcastle, by Leeds, Bradford, in connecting to the world. 75 long-haul destinations that aren't served by any other UK airport. And what those routes do is to make sure that tourists can get to parts of the north, that inward investment can get to Newcastle to invest in their manufacturing base, that exporters and their exports can get to global markets all across the world. That is what Heathrow has to offer. And with expansion, we can do more of that. More cities in the north connected to more growth markets around the world. So why not strengthen the connections, bring more competition in for Newcastle, Manchester, Leeds, Bradford, but connect Liverpool and Humberside to growing markets by connecting them directly into Heathrow. That drives 30,000 jobs for the north, most of them manufacturing jobs. 80% of those jobs were manufacturing jobs because we help to untap the huge potential that exists today within the Northern Powerhouse. That is why Heathrow expansion is so important as a UK opportunity rather than just a London and the South East opportunity. This is about the future we want for our country. This is about delivering prosperity, long-term growth, a rebalanced economy, helping support the Northern Powerhouse. And it's about exports and providing the trading links to be able to grow the UK's export potential. And this will be one of the first great tests for this government. Will they make the right decision for the UK and get on an expand Heathrow, as the Airports Commission has recommended that they should do? And we need to make our voices heard to say that this is a national issue, we need national support, and there is strong support from Labour in the north and from the unions to make sure we finally get on with it and hold the government to account.
Thanks very much, John. Over to you, Conor.
Okay, thanks, Liv. Look, it's a very eminent panel of experts on devolution and local government and business, so I'll restrict my remarks to the politics of devolution. I approach it quite pragmatically. I think there are three aspects to my view on it. One is the concept of devolution. Second is the realities of where we're at vis-a-vis the north-south divide. And the third is the challenges that we face. And let me say at the outset, I think the Labour Party are very far behind on this agenda. I think we've allowed the Conservatives to own decentralisation and devolution, and that is not a good place for us to be. There are huge political challenges for the Labour Party in the region, not just in the south of England. My own seat in St Helens North is at the centre of the North West, between Liverpool and Manchester, but we didn't win seats in Warrington South and in Weaver Vale across the river, where we expected to, and we lost a seat like Bolton West. So it's clear that the Labour Party needs to really engage with the devolution agenda and show people in places like the North West that we're listening to them and that we are responding to their concerns. So look, fundamentally the concept is a good one, taking power away from centralised institutions that seem very remote from people's lives and giving communities decisions over things that affect them is fundamentally a very good thing. My concern though lies in the realities of where we're at in terms of the shrinking of the state, and somewhere like the North West, where there's a huge reliance on public sector, not just for jobs but for investment and to a great degree as well community cohesion. You know, my seat in St Helens North could be described as a post-industrial one. We had a huge glassworks, we had four or five pits that sustained employment for decades for and across generations. And we don't have that anymore. There's a real lack of skilled jobs. You know, the wage gap between somewhere like St Helens and London is growing rapidly. The IPPR commissioned a very good report recently that showed as well that disposable income is very far behind in the Northwest, other parts of the country. And my worry is, and one of the first debates I took part in as a new MP was with David Mowat, a Conservative MP in Warrington, about Devo Mank, about the devolution of powers over health spending to Manchester. And he couldn't answer a simple question that I posed, which was, if there are unforeseen circumstances or if there is a crisis, will the NHS in Manchester be left to sink or swim? And he couldn't answer that. And part of the concern I have is that it appears that the devolution agenda is about devolving responsibility for making cuts to public services. I've seen it in my own region in Merseyside, where police, fire and rescue have been cut to the bone. Investment that we had hoped for, you know, structurally around infrastructure hasn't come forward. Investment for jobs that we thought was coming hasn't come forward too. So there is a real need to stimulate the economy, and my concern is that needs to be delivered centrally first and then implemented locally. Let me just say something finally about some of what I think are the challenges around the shape of devolution and around the governance structures that we're going to put in place. Look, I'm a Merseyside MP. St Helens is part of the Liverpool City region. But of my six neighbouring MPs, only two of them are in Merseyside. The people in my constituency, in terms of their identity and where they look and where they, you know, where they work, where they shop, where they socialise. In my own relatively small constituency of 75,000 people, I have a part of the constituency that considers itself to be in Lancashire. I have another part of the constituency that considers itself to be part of Wigan. I have part of St Helens Town that's divided between a St Helens identity and looking towards Liverpool, and the part where I live in Newtonley Willows considers itself part of Warrington and Cheshire. Now, my worry about the structure that we impose in terms of devolution is that people will behave with their backs to each other. So our centre of gravity isn't necessarily orientated towards Liverpool. It's at the centre of the North West. So my worry about the model is that we cut off what are in fact pretty natural alliances between people in Cheshire and Lancashire and Greater Manchester and Merseyside. So I think it would be right to say I retain a healthy scepticism about the ability to make this work. But I take a pragmatic approach in that if it helps improve the quality of lives of people in my constituency, if it helps them feel closer to where decisions are made, then fundamentally I think that's a good thing. But I'm under no illusion about the scale of the challenge, both in terms of implementing this but also for the Labour Party in coming to a consistent and coherent policy on devolution.
Thanks very much, Conor.
Tony, over to you.
Okay, thanks, and thanks Fabians for inviting me. I mean, there is substance to this idea. I mean, it's possible to quibble with the government about its concentration of the bulk of cutting the deficit on local government. You can have that argument separately from the one about the Northern Powerhouse and an attempt by George Osborne, which I believe is a genuine attempt, to do something to decentralise what is an incredibly centralised country. England, and it's also true actually in Wales and Scotland, within those nations, it's a very centralised place by any standards compared with anywhere else in the world. And although there's been devolution of power to Scotland and to Wales, nothing similar really has been planned for England. And, you know, George Osborne, I think, realised that from the Conservatives' point of view, there was a coming together of a number of issues. One is the fact that the Conservatives had died out in big core cities in the north. There are no Conservative MPs in Newcastle or Liverpool or Manchester, and you know, it's quite a long list, and that spreading out throughout the conurbations in the north. But secondly, throughout the 1997 to 2010 period, economic growth, although there were targets given to the RDAs to reverse this, actually growth was fastest in London and the South East again. So for these two reasons, one is you can't in the end have a country in which some regions are always pulling away from others, and the disparities between GDP per head of cities in this country is far greater than in most other European continental countries. So there's a real issue here. So I think that what George Osborne did, and I'm not criticising him for this, politicians being political is nothing to be disliked, is that he realised that there was a good political reason for the Conservative Party showing it loved the north of England a bit, and also it was the right thing to do to try to rebuild the economy of the north so it would more effectively compete with the south, but not so much compete, but you know, had a chance of being able to drive GDP and GVA, economic output per head upwards. So, and we know more central power isn't the answer. I mean, if more you can't have more centralised power than we have in England. So, you know, if it was centralising all the money and redistributing it from Whitehall, it might have worked by now, but it hasn't. So we do need to look, I think, to giving sub-national areas, and choose my words carefully, more power to make decisions about how they use their own resources, because much of the money is raised in the area, rather than expecting Whitehall to know how to do it within, you know, Northwest or Yorkshire or Yorkshire and Humberside or the Northeast. So, but the way it's been done, of course, is a very British way, or the UK and England way, which is that decentralisation has to be earned and bargained for and negotiated. And you only have to ask yourself the question, you know, if the Scots had to do it like this, do you think that would have ended well? You know, he said to Mr. Salmond, you've got to come and convince the Treasury that you have a bit of freedom. I don't think that, you know, the ballot box worked, and the Scots have got a remarkable amount of autonomy within the United Kingdom. Not so city regions, sub-national areas in England. Now, just to come to the end of what I'm going to say, I think that you have to say the Greater Manchester model, which we discuss a lot, is a real thing. It evolved for and of itself over a number of years, predating the change, the growing consensus at the national level that city regions were the answer to everything. And it's not surprising that it is the Greater Manchester area which has been offered the greatest degree of autonomy in the new system, that it in turn has been willing, slightly through gritted teeth, I think, to accept the idea of a directly elected mayor, but they're going to do that, and we'll have that competition coming up in 2017. And that it appears that, to use the words of the documentation, you know, the NHS devolution to Greater Manchester, which is not to the Greater Manchester Council, actually, but it's to Greater Manchester, would leave decisions about the health service in Greater Manchester being made in Greater Manchester, which, if it occurred, is a fascinating and, frankly, rather revolutionary decision, which, personally, I think, you know, might indeed lead to better decision-making. Again, I'm not sure having all the decisions made about these things from desks in SW1 is necessarily the right way forward. Now, two brief final thoughts. One is, there is an accountability issue here, quite how, you know, what academics and policy lovers like to talk about at meetings like this with the new constructions of government and things, you know, it can so easily look to the public like just more politicians, and the question of how these new arrangements where they emerge are held to account is a real one and not solved at all yet. Now the second issue Connor raised is of course the geography challenge. You know, the Industrial Revolution left the United Kingdom with a particular layout of cities and big towns near cities and smaller towns near them, all of which are kind of, in American terms, in one, in some cases, almost in one metropolitan super region. You know, the whole of the north of England is, in effect, in some ways, a metropolitan super region, which is why, in fairness to Osborne, he's right about Northern Rail, and more that that can be liberated from the hands, complicated hands of government, the better in many ways, so, or national government. So, just to come back to something Connor said, I do think the Labour Party is way behind the curve on this. I think they've allowed, if I can say so, George Osborne to make all the running, and it is the business of opposition to challenge the government to do what it's doing better, and indeed, I would hope, to push the government to go a bit further. My final thought is this, bad trick to play on the chair to keep saying my final point, then my final point, is, I mean, the resource transfers, what happens if things go wrong, and it is an issue, that you do need substantial resource transfers around a country like England, around the UK. But the truth is, Wales is going to get substantial devolved tax-raising power, and it has a GDP per head which is lower than most regions of England. So, that, you know, the Barnett formula will effect protect it. So it is possible to have resource distribution around the country in ways that places that have lower levels of economic output or which don't keep up with the average can be protected. But saying we have to run everything from London in order never to devolve is simple. Almost every other country in Europe does something different. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for those very broad and interesting remarks. Jessica, start out, over to you.
Thank you. The first point I'd like to make, just on the subject of this event, spin or substance, on the spin side of the equation, language is obviously important in politics, and language in terms of framing political and economic projects is quite crucial. I think one of the challenges for people who've been in favour of devolution, have been making the case for devolution over the years, is that they've never quite had cut through to the public. And I think the Northern Powerhouse framing, certainly for the first time, has kind of broken through to normal people outside kind of various bubbles that lots of us operate in. People understand what it means, and it's quite a kind of catchy term for that. So I think that's been a successful, positive spin on what I do think is a project that has some substance. The underlying challenge for our economy in England is clearly the north-south divide, is that the economy is heavily focused on London, and northern regions and other regions don't punch above their weight, and if they did, overall our GDP would increase. It's not just a question of devolving the levers of growth, it also needs to be a question of devolving wider elements of public service reform in the mix, so that not just new jobs can be created, but also people who live in those areas can benefit from those new jobs being created, and so you have the skills and employment support and the public service reform in the round that goes with it. So the broad reach of these, the Northern Powerhouse project, certainly moves us beyond where we might have thought things would be when we started with city deals in their early days in the previous government. What's on the table now with these devolution deals that are potentially coming through in the next weeks and months is much, much wider set of powers that are being devolved. I think it's clear that the substance, and so I think we need to kind of judge them on their merits and judge where we'll see lots of different devolution deals coming through. We do need to judge them on their merits and look at, are we actually devolving the levers to generate real growth, and is the package of kind of connectivity, human capital in the round part of things? I think that the broad idea is something that Labour should be agreed with, but the critique of the project needs to kind of look at the particular aspects of it. The transparency point's been made already in terms of things being at Whitehall's behest and lots of different sort of wheels being reinvented, but different people having bilateral relationships with government. There's not massive transparency in the deal-making process. And so I think as things go on and devolution itself is evidence and continues, I think we can move towards more of a clear what's on offer, because at the moment things are quite at the discretion of the Treasury. We've certainly seen since the election quite a fast pace of the devolution agenda in the Northern Powerhouse. I think there is a risk that what's happening at the moment with city regions needing to put together bids is that the pace of things is not necessarily taking the people in the regions and the people in the areas who are going to be affected by potentially new metro mayors, not really taking them necessarily on a journey of what that means for the government. So the comments that Connor was making about how people feel in terms of their identity and how the governance sort of fits in with that is going to be really important. I would say on the geography side, though, you're never going to have a perfect geography. You have a London mayor, you know, where does kind of inner London start and stop and Greater London become something? I live in Hackney. There's an East London kind of identity, there's a Hackney identity, there's a London identity. I think if we get really bogged down in exactly what, I think governance needs to be to a degree quite agile to respond to different identities, but I think if we try to kind of pin down everybody's identity and where the lines on the map are, we'll never move forward. I think that the other thing that needs to happen is that, and I think this won't go away, fiscal powers, powers of retaining taxes that are raised locally and potential revenue raising powers need to be on the table and aren't substantively at the moment, and I think that that will be something that will have to, that the clamour will grow for more and more. So in terms of the substance of the Northern Powerhouse, over the next sort of 5 years of this parliamentary term, I think there will be real political and economic consequences, and I think that the centre of gravity of English governance will certainly shift outside London, and the centre of gravity of the economy will have X number of new metro mayors. Certainly we'll have a Manchester metro mayor in 2017, and as yet to be confirmed, other potential metro mayors in city regions. As things stand, the mayor of Manchester that will be elected in 2017 will be a more powerful individual than the mayor of London, because that mayor will have under its remit the responsibility for NHS budgets. So I think there will be a kind of counterbalance discussion about more powers. And so I do see that these devolution processes, kind of once you get the genie out of the bottle, it's very hard to turn back. You've seen that in terms of London when it first had a mayor in the year 2000. It's acquired more powers since. And when we're looking at a set of elected mayors in the country in 2017, they will have the experience, the capability that they'll increase, and the evidence to make the case for more devolution. And so I think that while the Chancellor at the moment has quite tight control over the process, I think that we're going to see less control, because you're going to have more power, more diffuse and more dispersed across the country. So to make my final points, I do think Labour writes off the Northern Powerhouse simply as spin at its own risk. It's certainly true that the Conservatives have stolen the march on Labour, notwithstanding the efforts of Labour councils over the last 5 years to be making the case of their own party. The key aspect of this is that it's driven from the Treasury. The Treasury holds the money, the purse strings. And if you don't have the Treasury, the way the Whitehall works at the moment, if you don't have the Treasury driving the agenda, it's not going to happen. And that didn't happen with the Labour Party in opposition. So substance will develop substantively over the next 5 years. We'll have a very different shape of governance by 2020. And I think the key questions for Labour are, what is its economic strategy for the North to counter the Northern Powerhouse, but also politically, what's its political strategy for the South? Because clearly, is it going to use devolution to make inroads into areas that it doesn't see as so electorally popular at the moment?
Thank you very much for that. I'm particularly interested in what you said, both about the potential for fiscal powers to be devolved, but also the danger of going too fast and not taking the public with you. We're about to produce some research in a month or so, which has shown that from the focus groups we did, there is very little public appetite for the devolution of tax powers, because there's very healthy public scepticism about devolution, and there's lots of worries about this. Perhaps we can get into that in the debate later on. Nick, thanks for joining us. I'll over to you for 4 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I'm kind of in the thick of it at the moment. because I'm one of the leaders that was in China last week with George Osborne promoting the concept of the Northern Powerhouse. It's interesting that the debate on the panel today has tended to talk about Northern Powerhouse and devolution as interchangeable. They're not. They are parallel concepts, they are interrelated, but they are different things. Let me just try and say a bit about what I think that the Northern Powerhouse is, and some of the challenges for Labour. Firstly, this is a recognition that the population of the North, as represented by the five major cities, Liverpool, Sheffield, Leeds, Manchester, Newcastle, has a population, if you take that whole area, of 15 million people, which is a third bigger than London. Now that is an important message around the size of the economic opportunity here in terms of investing to rebalance the country. So firstly, the Northern Powerhouse is an economic concept. It's moving away from the idea that resources are allocated simply to deal with the consequences of an overheating London and South East, and shifting towards investing in other parts of the country in order to stimulate growth. Now, the government isn't fully there on that yet. They still have this dilemma about, do they put money into areas where they're politically strong, or do they seek to open new boundaries? But that is clearly the economic concept there. It's also, as people have alluded to, a political narrative for the Chancellor. It was interesting that everything we did last week, in fact, anything that happens now in any of our major cities seems to get branded as part of the Northern Powerhouse Initiative, including all of the things that we've been doing for many years before anybody came up with the concept. So it is becoming a bit of a label for virtually anything that happens, and we shouldn't allow that to detract from the seriousness of the agenda that we have to pursue here. It's an organisational challenge. And what we've been doing as council leaders is working across our geography to try to find new ways of joining things up better. So our big pitch at the moment is for investment in transport infrastructure, because if you can speed up journey times between the major cities, then that transforms the labour market. It transforms the way that people move around, it transforms the job opportunities. Currently, it can take you anywhere between 2.5 and 3 hours to get from Newcastle to Sheffield, which is a journey of just over 100 miles. We want that journey to come down to no more than an hour and a half. And if we can do that, that would absolutely transform the economy and the investment opportunities, because it would make people much more mobile. And just to draw a China analogy, I was talking to the mayor of Chengdu last week, and they have a city about 140 kilometres away, and they've just built in a year a high-speed train to connect the two that you can travel between them in 45 minutes. Now, that shows the scale of development in China and how we are woefully behind the curve here. It presents some governance challenges because at the moment what we're doing this is through the creaking mechanism of local government, and for me, we need new governance arrangements which reflect the importance of this narrative, because I think as it develops, the ability of local government to continue to deliver, particularly in light of the level of cuts that we face, is going to make that increasingly difficult. But above all, I think this is a huge missed opportunity for Labour, and I have the scars on my back and the curses ringing in my ears from frontbench colleagues who said pretty disgraceful things to me over the last few years about what we were seeking to do. I've been accused of being a traitor and of not wanting to serve the party's interests. Well, I'm sodding well elected to represent the people in Newcastle and my region, and I will put jobs and growth first, and it's about time the Labour Party understood that and grew a bit and got with the picture here, because we cannot allow this to become simply a Tory narrative which allows them to break through into the political hinterland that they've never had a councillor elected in Newcastle since 1992. And we're doing our best to stop them getting one elected next year. But they're clearly seeing this as a political agenda. They are ahead of the curve on this. We are woefully behind. And it's about time Labour had an answer to the issues of the North, which doesn't include the word nationalising everything, because that also is not the right answer. No doubt we'll get into some of those when we get into the debate, but I think this is the big issue that Labour needs to get its head around, because we cannot simply have a one-state-fits-all solution for the future.
Thank you very much. Okay, we'll go into questions in a second. I think the thing that's come across really strongly from all of this is that we have totally lost the narrative to the Tories. We have to do something about it. So I'm going to abuse my position of chair and say to the panel, I'd like to ask them all in their first answer to give me one thing the Labour Party could do. Just one thing that you'd like to see them do that would help in that problem. Right, seek hands from the audience, please. Take them in round three. The hand at the back. The microphone just there. And tell us who you are, please, and go for it with a question.
I thought you were actually going to ask the panel a question. Okay. We've had different positions. On your right, we were warned that the inverted commas devolution is really a poison chalice of how that instead of Whitehall, Gideon, Arthur Oliver, George Osborne doing the cuts, that poison chalice would have to be done by the local authorities. That's already happening. The local authorities, as an example, down at the basic level of bus services. But no, I mean, devolution, it has been around almost 50 years. I mean, I may sound ancient, but in 69, there was a very good, rigorous report. On a royal commission.
Sorry to interrupt. Is there a question that you could come to a question?
The question is, okay, yes, we need to define a policy, because the Tories don't work on strategic policy. It's short-termism. So, yes, let's they clearly decide the...
Okay, thank you very much. So we need some clear policy solutions. Hopefully the panel will give us some. Any more hands in the audience? Don't be shy. There's one there. Thank you very much. Tell us who you are.
Thank you. Yes, Kate Hewitt from the Aviation Environment Federation. I have a question specifically for John Holland Kay from Heathrow. So we're a not-for-profit organisation calling for the aviation sector to operate within sustainable limits. Obviously, we recognise that aviation has an economic role to play, both in the southeast and more generally in the UK. And I'm interested, in the context of this discussion today, in your view of the analysis by the Airports Commission on this subject. Obviously, we know that the Airports Commission is supporting, unsurprisingly perhaps, supporting the building of a third runway at Heathrow. But that nevertheless, their analysis indicates that doing so would be quite likely, in fact, to draw growth out of regional airports. That the forecasts for passenger growth from regional airports are on average lower if you build a third runway than if you don't, and that effect is particularly strong if you take account of the need to limit the growth of the sector to national level in line with the Climate Change Act and the UK's climate change commitments. So I'm interested in your views on that and whether you think that analysis is correct.
Okay, is there any more questions? I'll take one more question in this round. Oh, there's more hands now. There's one lady at the front here.
Hi, I'm a Northerner.
Hang on, there's a microphone coming. It's all right.
Oh, sorry. She's I don't usually lovely. Need one.
No, it's all right.
Hi, this is Colleen, Councillor for Scarborough. So I'm a Northerner, but I'm a rural Northerner. And all the talk has been about the big conurbations and the big cities. The North is more than just our post-industrial heritage. What does the Northern powerhouse mean for the lovely bits of the Lake District and the lovely bits of North Yorkshire?
Great question. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll start in reverse order. So Nick, we'll come to you first, if that's okay.
In terms of things that I would like our front bench colleagues to do, a number of things that they can do. Firstly, they can get behind the Transport for the North strategy, which my colleagues and I have drawn up and are pushing as a framework for investment in transport infrastructure. Secondly, they can work with us on defining an economic strategy which works and which is run from the North rather than run from Whitehall. And thirdly, and I think this is one of the areas where we can get ahead of the Tories, we can do more on skills and what the devolution of skills agendas mean, because I have a lot of conversations with businesses who tell me that they lack the skills for the future, and then the next sentence they tell me that It's a public sector problem to solve. And we've lost the connection between the conversation about business investment in long-term skills and public sector investment in long-term skills and how we marry those two conversations together. So I think there's a radical space for labour in the skills approach that we can capitalise on. I was in China last week. China are building, this year, 71 new airports. Just think about it, 71 new airports. The rate of growth in China is absolutely phenomenal. And we are paralysed as a country about how we have our debates around national infrastructure. And it frustrates the hell out of me that it looks to me, from somebody who's not in London, that this is just one of those things, somebody's going to have to take a decision and move on. And from our point of view, we don't want to lose the connectivity that we have to the rest of the world through Heathrow. That's a really important part of our economic connectivity. But the significant thing for us around aviation policy is air passenger duty, because we are the city closest to the Scottish border, and the government have decided to devolve APD to the Scottish government, and that is going to create a problem for us. And so we need a solution on APD, which isn't simply about reducing local government expenditure in order to compensate for that. And the point around rural areas is absolutely important, because you're right, this isn't just about the post-industrial capitals. This is about a sense that we have people who are able to connect with each other, and an area which is easy to get around, easy to enjoy, and offers a good quality of life. And as part of that, you know, I arrived in Brighton yesterday. I haven't been to Brighton for years, but God, it's awful in terms of traffic and people and getting around. I think we've got much better opportunities in the north, and some of our rural areas offer the quality of life that makes investment in the north a really attractive prospect for the future.
Okay, Jessica. Okay. Try and keep remarks, just the response is quite short, so we can get as many rounds in as possible. That would be fantastic.
Sure. So on the one thing the Labour Party could do to compensate for its slowness on devolution, if Corbyn's Labour did want to challenge the fiscal orthodoxy, I would say that looking seriously at devolving revenue-raising capability to local government would be a really good start. It's not been something that's been on the table under the last Labour opposition, and it certainly isn't something that's massively going to be on the table, so they could really push that agenda with the government this term. I would agree with what Nick said around skills. I think how the Labour Party in Parliament tackles the government is going to be crucial. There are some departments that are less sold onto this agenda than others. It's being driven from the Treasury. Greg Clark at CLG is also driving it, working across government. But big departments like the DWP and BIS are not playing ball so much. So I think that the shadow teams could really drive that and get out ahead of it and make those arguments, because I think that Whitehall departments as a whole aren't bought into this agenda as they should be. On the rural point, I think you make a very good one. It's clearly is driven by cities and city growth. just as we were saying on the geography more broadly, it's not possible always to make the distinction. People living in rural areas often work or commute to cities or have a relationship with their cities, just as people in cities have a relationship with their rural hinterland. It has been a city-driven agenda. There are very different challenges for two-tier governance, and so not just northern rural areas, but southern, more majority rural areas, are looking at what kind of model works for them. And at the moment, there are some unanswered questions on, are we going to see a mayor of Cornwall imposed? Are we going to see a mayor of Derbyshire imposed? Does the city governance model that's being pushed by this government, A, work for cities, but B, does it work for rural areas? And so there are some unanswered questions there.
Okay, fantastic. Tony.
Well, I suppose as a general guide to what should Labour say to George Osborne about this is they should just keep saying you're not doing enough. I mean, whatever it is, you know, that's the purpose of the opposition, you're not doing enough. So not doing enough devolution to the northern powerhouse, not, you know, whatever it is. So that would definitely be my simple, rather oversimple perhaps advice. On the rural issue, and I absolutely take this point about the southern rural. I mean, you know, if you're in southern rural, you're doubly out of the, you know, all of this, really. And there is an opening there for the Labour Party. I mean, we're not here to talk about rural southern England, but, you know, it's such as interesting that that's a freestanding thing that doesn't have any real attention paid to it. I think the problem with, given that we're trying to devolve power from the centre, we have to take one step at a time. And my slight fear is, if we don't accept one or two cities, and then another couple of cities, and then if we just give everything everywhere at once, Treasury will lose the battle. And they're the good people in all of this. The rest of Whitehall will just say no to everything. So I realise that if you're in a rural, not city type area, it looks as if everybody's getting the attention. But I absolutely do think that once this gets a dynamism within it going, it'll be impossible to resist for everywhere, and then it will be easier for more rural areas to come up with their own models for devolving power. So that's my slight... I absolutely get the point about the rural areas. And then... I'll stop there. Enough.
Fantastic. Thank you, Connor.
Just quickly, the Labour Party doesn't adapt well to change, and its structures are unwieldy and don't lend themselves to some of what we've discussed in terms of bringing power closer to people. People don't live their lives in branches or constituencies, they live their lives in communities, and the Labour Party needs to reflect that. One of the solutions that's been proposed about how we address some of the issues around Scotland and Wales and regional disparity in England in a political sense is that we have an English Labour Party and we become a federal UK Labour Party. I think that's a bad idea. I think what we should try and do is replicate some of the structures that are being created around devolution. I would like to see an enhanced role for regional Labour parties. I very much consider myself a North West MP, speak to all of my North West colleagues regularly from, you know, Lancaster right down to Liverpool and across to Manchester. And I think we need to talk a lot more in terms of being a regional focused party. On the point about rural isolation and how this fits in, I think it's a very well made one. 50% of my constituency is rural. I think it says something about where the Labour Party's at politically, that mine is one of the most rural constituencies represented by a Labour MP, and St Helens doesn't exactly conjure up images of, you know, the new Jerusalem in that sense. But I think the key for me around how you tackle rural isolation is around connectivity and access, whether it's transport, broadband, internet, support for small and medium enterprises. Transport, I think, is particularly crucial. It's one of my great bugbears, and I've spoken to Northern Rail about this, that they're connecting services into mainline stations like Warrington and Liverpool, sometimes arrive a couple of minutes after a departing train on the main line has left. Now, to me, that is just a really simple thing that could dramatically improve the opportunities for people who live on one of those connecting lines. So it is about access, it is about connectivity, and I think, you know, where Labour is behind on the devolution agenda, we're even further behind on the rural economy and tackling isolation and poverty and economic growth in rural areas as well.
Great, thank you. Well, I've obviously got a single great idea for Labour policy, which would be expanding Heathrow and getting behind the Air Force Commission, but that sort of comes on to the question that you asked about the Air Force Commission report. I'm not here to defend or justify everything in the Air Force Commission report, but what I would say is it wasn't a foregone conclusion by any means that they would recommend Heathrow. If you look at the questions that they were asked, they set some very challenging targets around sustainability and being fair to local communities, as well as doing the right thing for the local and national economy. And we had to change our plans massively to be able to meet those criteria, including falling within air quality targets, reducing noise for people even with expansion, fewer people impacted by noise, meeting climate change targets. And the acid test, I think, is the one that Nick raised earlier, jobs and growth. 30,000 new jobs for the north alone through Heathrow expansion. That is the net benefit of getting on and making this happen. And the sooner we can do that, the better we can help to deliver for Newcastle and for St Helens and for the other parts of the north. And we can do that within sustainable targets, and we can do it while being fair to local communities. I want to touch briefly on the rural question, because the area that I was born in Cumbria is a farming community, and I can see how that's changed over the last 30 years, and increasingly it's becoming a commuter community for people going out to Manchester. And it's certainly changed the society there. But on balance, I think probably for the better. It's brought more money into the area. So they're no longer farming communities, they're more diverse communities. But I think from a policy point of view, we need to make sure that we're looking after the local people so they don't get left behind and get pushed out further and further away from the main motorway arteries. So I think housing in rural areas needs to be a key thing so that people can stay as part of the local community. But I think there will be some benefits that come with it, and some of the better connectivity by road and better broadband type connectivity will come with the increased use of the rural north for commuting into the major accommodations.
Okay, can I see a show of hands for who else wants to ask a question? I'm tempted to take them all now and then have one final round of the panel. Yeah, you there, sir?
Thanks very much. I'm Chris from Bolton. I used to be a Labour councillor until May when I lost my seat. I just wanted to ask a question about the relationship between local government and the Labour Party, particularly the PLP. I know my time as a councillor and having worked for Labour MPs in the past, I completely understand your points, Connor, particularly your scepticism about the Northern Powerhouse in regards to this being a way for the government to make local government force cuts on people, particularly in Labour councils. But more so, I completely agree with Nick in regards to how the Labour Party needs to grow up in regards to this issue. And my question is really, what can we do as a Labour Party to improve that kind of relationship between the PLP and local government? Because certainly at times, I've experienced it, there is a bit of a division between the PLP and local government, that is, rather than us being all one party, we're actually two separate branches of one party, never mind having an English party and a Scottish party. What can we actually do to improve that? Because if we can all try and work together on this issue, it would make a big difference.
Great question. Okay, who else has got a question? Man here.
Hi, I'm Tim Hawkins from the Manchester Airports Group. To pick up on John's comments about Heathrow and its contribution to the Northern Powerhouse, just to make one point that I think by some distance the biggest contribution that aviation can make to the Northern Powerhouse is through a well-connected set of airports in the north, and that the role that transport infrastructure between cities and between those transport hubs would play. And I suppose my question is how do we get a greater priority attached to delivering that investment rather than just talking about it?
Can I see more hands? Okay, yep, there's a hand there.
Hi, my name is Anthony. I'm from Montgomery. My question is, one of the things Stella Creasy had mentioned quite often during her deputy leadership campaign was to maybe explore the idea of local government issuing bonds to finance capital. Obviously, this kind of presents a huge series of risks and challenges that we've encountered, but does this provide opportunities for financing the local infrastructure and making sure that decisions made are actually made by local communities and service companies?
Okay, is there anybody else who wants to ask a question? In particular, is there a woman who wants to ask a question? No? Okay, we'll go to final comments from the panel, and then we'll finish after that. Jessica, we'll start with you, if that's okay.
Okay, no, sure. I think the question of issuing bonds is a good one. I think that certainly is the future. I think the LGA in particular has been looking at a model where local government could kind of get together to share the risk. Clearly the sort of risk sharing is the issue in numbers of authorities. So if local authorities could work together and take on that risk, that could address some of the challenges. It certainly is something that that should be explored. I think on the relationship between the Labour Party and local government, the Labour Party has a strong history of local practice, but a kind of policy and approach to centralism that's kind of dominated its thought for the last 50 years, and that does sort of feed into its relationship between councillors and the party. I think that as the party's in opposition, it's got a very good opportunity to demonstrate good Labour effective governance in practice. And could be really using that strategically to tell a story about how the party would put its values into practice So I think that learning from what councils are doing, fighting, dealing with challenges from government would be a good place to start for the relationship.
Okay, Nick.
I think the issues about local government generally and the PLP, I don't want to overplay them because there's no point simply highlighting divisions, but they are clearly there. They are partly personal and they're partly structural. Some of the personal difficulties are about, frankly, people who have worked their way to get into a position of authority and responsibility as an MP and are told by people that we need a Labour government to do things and want to get on and do things. And then these councils keep getting away saying, actually, we could do some of this for you. And so that's where some of the tension comes. Structurally, the party is woeful in its representation of local government. There are two local government reps on the National Executive Committee, compared with, I think, 10 trade union reps. And of course, when the trade union levy rules were changed, the trade union rep size didn't go down, so in fact the trade unions are now getting the party on the cheap. And on the National Policy Forum, there are more youth reps than there are local government reps. So structurally, the party has a problem with local government that it needs to resolve. And I was disappointed that that wasn't properly reflected in the Collins Review last year. We have to work together. We cannot assume that we have two different bits of the Labour Party, one which is about winning national elections and one which is about councils and council elections. It irritated the hell out of me that if you went into Labour Party headquarters, there was a countdown to the next general election. It said next election in 2 years. Actually, no, the next elections were the local and European elections. But the party machinery didn't take those into account, didn't reflect those, didn't understand their significance and importance to us in terms of having an infrastructure on the ground. And Labour local government is, I think, collectively the single biggest financial contributor to the party now in terms of the levy that we pay and the way in which we fund the party through the Association of Labour Councillors. And by 2020, most of our leadership capacity for doing things, implementing difficult decisions, building coalitions for change, putting together the case for public sector reform, our leadership will be in local government, not in our PLP. And we need to be able to learn from each other in order to capitalise that experience and that and the work that people do. Broadly, the point I want to make about transport infrastructure, the stuff we're doing around transport for the North is not just about rail. For the first time, because previously, when we talk about transport infrastructure, we have a conversation about rail here, we have a conversation about roads, we have a conversation about ports, we have a conversation about airports, we don't join it up. And what we are doing for the first time is joining that up at a spatial and an economic geography which makes sense. And so the transport for the North shouldn't be underestimated how radical that is in terms of a step forward around spatial and economic transport planning. And it's not just about rail, and I think it's really very exciting. Of course, that will require lots of additional investment, and we know that some of that investment will come from government sources, particularly government capital finance around transport. But it's got to come from other sources as well, which is one of the reasons I was in China last week trying to find investment opportunities for that. It's why local government is working together to think about bonds. We've got 21 councils working through the LGA to do exactly that. But I think also an untapped source of investment potential is our pension funds. We've not used those to invest in infrastructure in the UK. And I think that's another undervalued opportunity here. All of this, I think, adds up to huge ambition, led by Labour in local government, with outriders in the Conservative Party, and let's not forget that Osborne is quite a minority in the Conservative Party in being in favour of devolution in the North. I suspect that's more about his own leadership ambitions than it is about anything else, but, you know, politics is always a marriage of strange agendas at any one particular time. But the Labour Party absolutely needs to get up to speed with this agenda because we are in danger of being left behind, marginalised and isolated. And I don't want the Labour Party to simply become a rump of a party which represents people in metropolitan areas and nowhere else in the North and nowhere else in the country. And to do that, we've got to have a fundamental rethink of our approach.
Thank you. I wonder if it's perhaps that more that the party's being left behind in the comms battle rather than its commitment to the issues, but I don't know what you think about that, Toby.
check I answer the right question. You mean in terms of non-metropolitan England or more generally? Forgive me.
I mean, I think that the problem we've got now is a communications issue. So the Northern Powerhouse slogan, rather than the reality of what George Osborne's actually doing, and is Labour really behind it on the actual substance, or is it just behind on the comms?
Well, I think the thing is, there is something real there. The fact that George Osborne took a load of several city leaders from the north of England to China with him is a real thing. And I think that, you know, we can all quibble about how far he can get. And I actually, Nick's right about this. You know, the rest of Whitehall does not want to play ball. They're not at all interested in this. So it requires, you know, it's in some ways, you know, George Osborne has become, in this regard, a bit like Gordon Brown, as he's sort of begun to take a part of wider territory for the Treasury and try to deliver on it. And Gordon Brown did that on a lot of things, but, you know, and when he was Chancellor. And so I think that there is something real here. And so Labour may well not be putting their case across very well, but frankly, their case wasn't much to put across. And, you know, if I can, I chaired a commission for the Mayor of London looking at fiscal devolution for London, not making London better or worse off, but the possibility of devolving tax raising power. And we went and talked to Labour front benchers, and they were not very receptive, if I'm honest. You know, they just weren't very receptive. So, neither were Conservative ones, I might add, but that's another matter. Anyway, on the relationship between MPs and senior local or local government figure, I mean, there's a great book to be written about this, because it has a lot to do with the insecurities, with due respect, of members of Parliament, whose role is a very, very complicated one, and the fact that if you are the leader of a big city, you do have more power than an MP, obviously, unless you're an MP who's a minister. And even then, I'm not sure, you know, most ministers, you have to be powerful. So this competition for political space, which is very complicated indeed. And I would hope, for example, that out of the, you know, evolving city regional accountability mechanisms, MPs can be found a place, because that would make them feel more comfortable, for example. Yeah. So there's that. On the, we just as a country do need to invest more, and I'm afraid that means, as the state's not going to grow very much in Britain in years ahead, that means a bit less consumption and more investment, which is a bigger issue than today. You know, we just need to invest more. The public sector investment as a share of GDP is about 2%. Dreadful. I mean, just dreadful. So most of what we spend is on consumption. And that's a long-term issue, and it's why the big cities outside London don't have proper, with possible exception increasingly of Manchester, and Newcastle has a metro, but generally they have underdeveloped public transport systems compared with their analogues in other countries in Europe and North America. That needs to change, and it would mean less consumption and more investment. And lastly, on the bonds point, I mean, I've long been in favour of government, local government issuing bonds to fund things. But there's two issues, and so I'm 100% behind the idea that A, Public Work Loans Board, which is the government agency for lending money to local authority, has, whenever it's seen a big market developing, dropped its rates to make it easier for councils to get money that way, which kind of makes it quite hard to evolve a market. And secondly, and I'm not sure they dropped, I think they did once drop their rates, so anyway, it's very hard to compete with the PWLB, who are the government offering very cheap money at a time when money's very cheap. And the other thing is public spending constraints. All this, it may be borrowed, the money may come from somewhere that's like a council pension fund, but in the end, unless it's in the private sector, the whole transaction's in the private sector, it'll bump into Britain's weird way of doing public spending planning, which still sees investing in housing by the state or railways by the state is somehow the same as investing in, well, just spending money on day-to-day, you know, just burning it in furnaces, really. I mean, it just, you know, they just, so the government does that, but you're just saying that there's no way of differentiating between borrowing for investment and borrowing for anything else. And that also probably needs to change.
Okay, we'll go to you, John, and then Connor, you can wrap up.
Great, thank you. And I echo the point. We need an integrated transport system. It's not rail links to airports and rail link and air links between airports. We need both. And I know that from conversations with Leeds Bradford that better rail links into Leeds Bradford is absolutely fundamental to the development of that regional area. I'm not well placed to comment on the relationship between the PLP and councils, but business has this kind of challenge all the time in big corporates, and the way we get around it is by finding a common goal that everyone can get motivated behind and aligning the organisation behind it. And it seems to me that's a good way to resolve this. And I think I wonder whether there's any better goal than the one that was raised earlier about jobs and growth, because that is delivering the promise to the people of Britain. It's about creating aspiration and hope and giving people the satisfaction of having their own job and being able to pay for themselves. It's also earning the money for the government to be able to deliver a fairer society, a more balanced society, and that would seem to me to be the way to bring the whole party together.
Thank you. And Conor, if you could close.
Okay, so quickly on bonds, I'm not particularly au fait with it, but what I am up for is ideas that that work, notwithstanding some of the complications Tony outlined. I think, as Nick said, there's been a lot of groundwork done already on this, and I think it's something the party should seriously consider adopting. On aviation, we're very lucky to have Manchester and Liverpool Airport in the northwest. I'm equidistant from both where I live, and the road and rail connections to Manchester in particular are fantastic and are of huge benefit to parts of the world like the one I represent. Look, on the party and the PLP, let me just say a couple of things on that. Firstly, I firmly believe that councillors and local authority leaders are in the vanguard of Labour struggle for electability. I absolutely fundamentally believe that. I have a fantastic council leader in St Helens, Barry Grunewald. I speak to him every other day. My councillors are my eyes and ears on the ground. I couldn't do my job effectively without them. They're great ambassadors for the party. They're smart people who work hard and love their communities and have ideas about how to make it better. So the relationship I have personally with my local authority and councillors is a very good one. And I think part of that is because I don't feel particularly territorial about how I do my politics. We're all on the same side. We all want broadly the same things. Where there are issues that come up for discussion, where as MP I have to look at the wider impact, perhaps across the constituency or across the region, we talk about it and we work it out. I think the difficulty is in the Parliamentary Labour Party, there is a bit of illiteracy around local government. There are fewer and fewer people in the Parliamentary Party who have come through local government. You know, look, I'm really sorry you lost your seat. I stood for local election twice and lost. The second time I lost by 21 votes, and I stood in a joint ticket with my wife who won. So that was that was pretty tough. So I know how it feels to lose, and it's not nice. But I do genuinely believe that the party has got to, as Nick said, has got to treat local government with more respect. It's got to listen to local government, and not in a patronising or tokenistic way. It's got to do it because, as I say, our grassroots are the lifeblood of the party. The work that they do, the public-facing role that they have, are absolutely critical. We need good people in local government, and when we get good people in local government, you know, Nick is a great example of this, but when we get people who are good leaders in local government, whether it's at city council level, right down to the parish councils I have in my own constituency, we've got to promote those people, we've got to listen to those people, and we've got to take them seriously, because I'm in London 4 days a week. No one knows more about what's going on in my constituency than councillors, which is why I hugely value the good relationship I have with them.
Okay, thank you. I'm afraid that's all we've got time for, but thank you very much for joining us today. If you want to stay involved in the debate and you're not currently a member of the Fabian Society, you've got forms on your chairs. It'd be great to have you aboard. And have a look at the back for some of our recent publications. But thank you very much for coming. Thanks for your time. Enjoy the rest of your conference.
All right. Tomorrow is actually not that busy, and I'm going back. I've got to get back in again tomorrow. But today is efficiently frantic. Tomorrow is
I'm sorry I didn't get to this morning in the training log.
How did it go?
It went very well, thanks.